This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Happy Mother's Day weekend to all you atheist and agnostic moms. Yes, there are many of you, and to my own mother. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I joined my mother back in 1976 in founding the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and FFRF was spearheaded for nearly 30 years by Ann Nicole Gaylor as principal founder and president.
And how firm a foundation it is. And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. This is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of freethinkers. We work as a state church watchdog. Free Thought Radio broadcasts from Madison, Wisconsin. And, of course, we're podcasting all over the planet.
In a few minutes, we'll speak in studio with one of FFRF's staff attorneys, Patrick Elliott, and he's going to tell us what's going on with a challenge we have and the ACLU of Virginia has against a Ten Commandments poster in a public high school, and there's some other legal developments.
Then, as promised, we'll speak with Jeff Schott, who is the premier Paul J. Gaylor Memorial Student Activist Awardee. He's from Tennessee. He's a high school student. He'll tell us about what happened to him when he dressed up for Fictional Character Day as Jesus Christ.
And in this segment, since it's Mother's Day weekend, we want to talk about the state church issue of the day, the big assault, the Catholic Church's campaign against contraceptive rights.
Now, as you know, the Freedom From Religion Foundation placed a version of its now famous full-page ad called It's Time to Quit the Catholic Church in the Washington Post this week. And it was also on the back page of the Washington Express, with 108 distributors wearing the ad on their vests as they hawked that free paper to D.C. Metro riders. That was this last Tuesday.
And we did publish a version of this ad in the New York Times. It's an open letter to nominal and liberal Catholics, saying it's your moment of truth. Do you choose women or do you choose bishops? And we urge them to join those of us who place humanity above dogma. And the ad, we decided to put the ad in the Washington Post this past week because the House of Reps was in session, and that ad ran on Tuesday, May 8th.
Now, Ann Nicole Gaylor is Annie Laurie's mother, and she's my mother-in-law, who at the age of 85 and a half is still running as a volunteer director, the Women's Medical Fund charity.
And this is our annual Mother's Day pitch on behalf of the Women's Medical Fund, who says atheists don't start charities. Women's Medical Fund started by my mother, by Professor Bob West, who's a lifetime member of FFRF, and by the late Peg West. And it has provided funding for abortions for many, many needy women, mostly in Wisconsin. Since the cutoff caused by the Catholic Church of medical assistance abortions in our state. And my mother was recalling that she remembered the time when Bob first suggested raising money to help women without means pay for abortions. And my mother's reaction at that time was, oh, the need is so great. The fund will always be out of money. And Bob responded, but we would help some of them. And here we are today, some 20,000 women helped to date with your help. The Women's Medical Fund is a pure charity. Your money goes directly to help a woman exercise her constitutional rights and is tax deductible.
If you want to make a donation to the Women's Medical Fund, send it to P.O. Box 248 in Madison, Wisconsin, 53701. That's the Women's Medical Fund, P.O. Box 248, Madison, Wisconsin, 53701. And you can also go to Women's Medical Fund, Wisconsin, Facebook page to give via PayPal in honor of Mother's Day.
And so we are coming up. We are going to be interviewing Patrick Elliott about the Ten Commandments and FFRF's challenge in Virginia. And we'll be back in a minute.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And we are a membership association serving those who are personally free from religion, who want to ensure the government stays free from religion as is required by our Constitution. We urge you to join us today at FFRF.org.
We hope today you will join us. And one of our main efforts is legal action, letters and lawsuits challenging violations of the separation of church and state. And so we have a growing legal staff, which works every day very hard on your behalf as members of the foundation who complain about these violations that you find in your area. And today we're happy to have in the studio with us Patrick Elliott. He's one of the Freedom From Religion Foundation's four staff attorneys. Patrick's been on our staff for more than 2 years. He started as a paralegal. He has his law degree from the University of Wisconsin right here in Madison.
So, Patrick, you are serving as co-counsel in one of FFRF's 10 lawsuits that are going on. And this one is in Virginia, in Giles County Schools. Do you want to tell us something about it and then what the developments have been this week?
Yeah, well, this is an issue that's been, you know, we've been involved with for over a year now. You know, originally we sent a complaint informing a school in Giles County, Virginia, about the Ten Commandments posting they had the wall, that it was unconstitutional. The superintendent replied and actually removed the Ten Commandments, and that subsequently, the community and number of churches became involved and kind of made a run on the school board. The school board subsequently voted to put the Ten Commandments back up. They also went through various renditions of adding other documents to the wall, and FFRF, along with the ACLU of Virginia, filed lawsuit in September on behalf of a parent and student in the school. And just this week, both sides, you know, had oral argument over their motions for summary judgment. So basically saying, as a matter of law, we are entitled to win the case. And that's what's been going on most recently.
Now, Rebecca Glenberg is the attorney in Virginia with the ACLU of Virginia. And she was at the oral arguments and you were not able to go, which is too bad. But they were very highly newsworthy. So let's talk a little bit about what happened.
Yeah. You know, Rebecca Glenberg, who has experience in First Amendment cases like this, previously took a case regarding prayer at a Virginia military academy, and, you know, was successful and ultimately...
This was prayers over mealtimes.
Prayers during mealtimes, yes. And she was, you know, in court this week discussing this issue with the federal judge there in the Western District of Virginia. Really, the arguments are, you know, there's a religious purpose when the school board adopted to put the Ten Commandments back up. This was done with a religious purpose. The community has always viewed this issue as being a religious issue. It seems pretty obvious to all of, you know, the listeners and everybody saying, well, of course, putting the Ten Commandments is about religion.
And we played some of the clips from earlier news clips about that with the people at the school board saying, we want the Bible, we want God in our schools.
And yeah, in the context, you know, there was even a walkout in one of the schools by students and a rally to put the Ten Commandments back up. I mean, it's always been treated as a religious issue. Now, what happens when the lawsuits get started is, I think, the other side gets nervous and says, we have to change, you know, we have to change how we're characterizing this. So now they're starting, you know, to, in the briefs with the court, it's treated, you know, this is a part of our historical documents, is kind of the scheme that's being used to try to characterize this as not being about religion. At the hearing, it seems that the judge did not take too kindly to that characterization, given the context of what's going on here.
Now, when we first got this complaint, the Ten Commandments, it was a poster up by the principal's office, I think it is, in the corridor,
Well,
or close to the...
Well, they were in a number of different different schools, prominently placed in almost all of them. It was the Constitution on top with the Ten Commandments on the bottom.
And which I think is laughable because it's unconstitutional to put a Ten Commandments in a public school. So just putting the Constitution by it doesn't make this permissible. Why didn't, you know, the precedent is pretty clear. Do you want to talk about Stone versus Graham a little bit?
Well, yeah. You know, that's a case from, you know, the 1980s, basically there was a law passed to put the Ten Commandments, I believe it was Kentucky, to put the Ten Commandments in all public schools.
Not paid with public money. They thought that would be a way to get around it.
Yeah, and even in the posting on the actual Ten Commandments, it wasn't just the Ten Commandments. They had some explanation tying it to history as well. You know, the Supreme Court, in a per curiam opinion, basically said, you know, your purpose, this is done with a religious purpose. When you put this text alone in public view on school and on schoolroom walls, you know, your purpose is clear.
Patch
and struck that down.
Backpedal. What does per curiam mean?
It was an opinion of the court. There weren't multiple judges.
Pluralities. Yeah, they weren't divided.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they said the preeminent purpose is devotional. The first four commandments are entirely about which God to have and not to make any graven images and not to take the name in vain, that kind of thing. So,
Because a secular government's only supposed to have a secular purpose. That's what you're saying. A secular government can't have a religious purpose, even if what they do, like that moment of silence law, it's not necessarily religious, but it was struck down because it was shown to have a religious purpose behind it. So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's one of the factors, you know, of the lemon test, I guess, is the common parlance of one of the items that would a law would be struck down or a practice, government practice would be struck down. I mean, here you also have, besides the purpose, you also have endorsement. I mean, you have a statement on the school wall of the Ten Commandments, also some other documents that highlight a lot of times religious items or references to God. You know, that's an endorsement, which is a different issue than, you know, what was your purpose? This is also, what message are you?
So that the kids, this captive audience of school kids are getting this walking by the Ten Commandments every day in school as if the government and the school endorses it.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the school board voted on. And I think that's what the community wanted and got. And now we're, you know, in federal court and trying to, you know, get it resolved ultimately.
Now, you started to say that after we filed suit, they did this kind of sham thing of adding documents to the Ten Commandments poster. So what else is up there now?
There's a number of other things. There's a picture of like Lady Justice. There's some picture of George Washington with some quotes.
The Magna Carta.
George Washington or George Washington praying?
No, he's not praying.
Because that's a
there's
fake.
There's a number of items. It's the ones that have been in some other cases come up as they call them the foundations of law and government displays, where they've got these other items that have been added, which unfortunately not in the Fourth Circuit where this case is, but in the Sixth Circuit, there have been some decisions that didn't have the bad history here where you started off with just the Ten Commandments. Some of those judges had found uphold. However, as Rebecca Glenberg stated at the hearing, there's never been a school case allowing the Ten Commandments.
Never.
We don't think there will be one. It's not going to happen.
Let's talk about who is behind. It's not just the churches that were behind this, although they were a critical part of it, but the Liberty Council stepped in and is arguing the case on behalf of the school district. Who is the Liberty Council?
It's a group tied with Matt Stavers, the in charge of Liberty Council. He's also the dean at the Liberty University Law School.
Jerry Falwell.
Yeah, I mean they've been involved in a number of Christian legal fights and groups, including ultimately losing a Ten Commandments case.
Well, McCreary,
that went to the Supreme Court. Yeah,
McCreary, which was that case where they tried to say, "Oh, we're putting all these other documents that actually have something to bona fide to do with law."
Yeah.
And civil law. So, we're putting that next to the Ten Commandments as if the Ten Commandments is on par with it. And the Supreme Court said no.
Yeah. And again, there it was the religious purpose because it started out with, well, we're going to put up the Ten Commandments. And then it was as a litigation strategy trying to add all these other things. And
putting up the candy canes next to the nativity scene, that like to try to secularize something that's inherently religious, right?
Yeah.
Now, the big issue that came up last Monday at the oral arguments, which I found rather shocking, but I think you think bode well, is that the federal judge sort of suggested to the Liberty Council, what if we took down the four commandments, one through four, and left only the so-called more civil, non-sectarian?
This is my understanding, and I think in the context of some of how that was brought up was basically, I think the idea was brought up that, you know, if the Giles County School District loses this case, they'll be on the hook for plaintiff's attorney's fees, and that's something that they need to know. The judge also indicated that the context of the original, you know, there's the religious purpose here is what he was indicating. I think what he was getting at, and I don't know if this is, you know, trying to get, the defendants to change their display to end this violation. But I think what his comments also that went along with that were talking about, well, what is, you know, if you don't have a religious purpose, you'll have no problem with this proposal of changing
the display. So, make it six commandments instead of 10.
Yeah, and I know that I don't think, so the case was referred to mediation.
Yeah, this is the new trend in federal court. And
mediation?
Yeah, and well, you know how I feel, Patrick. no dice.
Well, because it still says thou shalt not, and it still sounds like a religious edict, even if it were just the last.
Yeah,
and if they changed the wording, it wouldn't matter. We all know that it was derived from the Ten Commandments.
And that's one thing. You know, the opinion in McCreary, that Supreme Court case, made specific reference to that, saying even these, prohibitions on conduct that everybody agrees on are subject to divine sanction. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, that principle still applies. So I don't think, you know, posting six commandments is going to change anything. Also, I think it was a suggestion for mediation, and that's going to be taking place in the next few weeks.
Telling high schoolers not to commit adultery, for example.
Now, was it Judge Breyer in the McCreary case who made that statement that, gee, even the so-called civil, the later six commandments would be by divine decree.
Yeah.
It's the thou shalt not. It's coming from a God on high to citizens and then being conveyed by the government. Was it Breyer who made that
exactly.
point?
Exactly. I believe Breyer wrote the majority opinion, so that would be Breyer, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, and did you talk with, you talked with Rebecca Glenberg since the oral arguments?
Yeah.
By email?
Yes, we've exchanged emails on it. So, I mean, really right now, it doesn't appear that, you know, Liberty Council is going to somehow, you know, this dispute's been going on for over a year. So I find it may be difficult to come to any settlement here when you have one side that has the Ten Commandments and on the wall, and they could resolve the lawsuit by removing it. You know, it doesn't seem like that has happened in the last year. I don't know that it will happen anytime soon. So.
No.
So this is likely that the judge will have to rule on, you know, both sides have submitted, motions for summary judgment and have, you know, put out the facts and put out the legal arguments, and we'll see.
And also, I think it would be important for people to know the extent to which the Liberty Council has tried to squelch this case, because they were so aggressive, Patrick, in trying to out the parent and student. Denying the right of protective, they were trying to deny the protective order to keep the names confidential in clearly the hope that then our plaintiffs would disappear because they would be so afraid in that community of reprisal. So I felt that was particularly reprehensible on the part of the Liberty Council and the school district to go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with, you know, a student is involved, and obviously the community is really impassioned, and there's been we've received, a lot of hate mail mm-hmm. about it. So no doubt somebody attending school would have a very difficult time. So that's very disappointing. The judge, you know, basically said in his order, will not tolerate harassment of the plaintiffs and granted a protective order.
So we prevailed, but they really fought hard.
Yeah, yes.
And very reprehensible, given the history of, you know, we can see what happened to Jessica Alquist in Rhode Island, and this is in the South, how she became a target, is still a target in her community. So it's terribly important to protect the identity.
I debated Matt Stark at the Liberty University. Matt Stark is a pro guy. He's like a real ideologue. He's a real pro preacher type who's not even open to discussion on this. So let's keep fighting the fight, Patrick.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Patrick Elliott.
Thank you.
And we are coming up, we're going to be talking with Jeff Schott, who is a kid who has challenged religion in the high schools and
he dressed up
paid
on,
a price.
On Fictional Character Day, he dressed up like Jesus Christ.
And became FFRF's newest student activist awardee. So we'll be hearing more about his adventures in a minute.
Hi, my name is Haas, and I live in Maryland. I probably have the distinction to be the only listener with a Muslim background, and I'm a big fan of the show.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And do you hear that gospel music playing? That's me playing some Jesus music. I'm Dan
Not
Barker.
Not really. You're playing irreverent gospel music.
But that's a lead into our topic for today. I used to be a gospel pianist and a minister preaching for Jesus. And today we're going to talk about Jesus in a different way.
Yeah, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and our guest is Jeff Schott. And he is the premier Paul J. Gaylor student activist award recipient. It's a memorial award that I created in my dad's honor. He died a year ago in May, was a almost lifelong non-believer. It never took. He was raised in a southern household, southern state. And I know that he would have really appreciated and gotten a kick out of what the first activist awardee did.
Is the award just for high schoolers?
It's for student activists. It's $1,000. And we gave it to Jeff Schott, who's 17. He's from Tennessee. He's in Spring Hill, Tennessee, which is close to Nashville. And we have him on the phone. Welcome to our program, Jeff.
Thank you.
Now, there's been a lot of unexpected publicity about this, about your dressing up. We should explain. Why don't you explain what happened when you were invited and students were invited in January to dress up for Fictional Character Day?
Well, essentially, we were having like a spirit week of sorts, and one of the day's themes was Fictional Character Day, and I decided to go as Jesus Christ.
What did other students dress up as?
Darth Vader, SpongeBob, stuff like that.
You mean Darth Vader is fictional?
Oh. I know. It's hard to believe. I thought it was a documentary.
Now, I saw you're wearing a T-shirt about Star Wars, so you must like the Star Wars characters yourself.
Oh, yeah. But I'm really big into Star Wars.
But you chose to dress up as a fictional character named Jesus Christ.
And we have, you wrote up a piece about it. It's in the April issue of Free Thought Today. We still have a few of those issues left if somebody wants to read Jeff's article. It's also online at ffrf.org. Go to publications, Free Thought Today, to find it.
And you can see his picture on there. He's got long hair. He looks like kind of a 17-year-old Jesus.
Is that where you got the impetus for this? Because of your long hair?
Well, that's kind of where it came from, because even before I went to school as Jesus, it was kind of like a joke that even though I'm an atheist, I look like what the Europeans depicted Jesus to have appeared. So people would call me Jesus kind of as a joke. And that was one of the reasons, but mainly just because, you know, I thought it'd be funny. And
well, it was funny.
Stuff like that.
Now you have long...
a lot of people thought so.
You have long blonde hair, it looks like. And you also, what I think is the crowning glory here is the nails that you... How did you put nails on yourself?
Oh, I just took some Sharpies and I drew circles on each side of my hands.
And then didn't you also, were you dragging a cross with you?
No, the only real prop I took was just a plastic hammer.
A plastic hammer, okay.
Yeah, because he was a carpenter.
Okay, and then you can see your picture online and in our newspaper.
Yeah, but the story, tell us the story of what happened then.
Well, that day was what we call a Power Monday, which means that it starts later than days usually would. Instead of 7:30 being first period, it doesn't happen until 8:15. So when you get to school, you basically just hang out and relax in the cafeteria for a while until the school day starts. And before, like, 7:20 is when I probably got pulled aside by my principal.
And well, and then what, you were asked to go into the hall, and then what happened?
Well, let me think. Well, first I was just sitting down with my friends, and we were eating breakfast in the morning. And then my principal came up and asked me to join him in his office, so I got up and followed him. But we didn't really make it to the office, because as soon as I stepped out of the cafeteria and into the hall, the resource officer for my school and the assistant principal were there waiting.
So that must have been pretty intimidating.
Yeah, that's pretty much the reaction that I had, because I didn't think it was going to be, you know, that big of a deal.
And what did they say?
Well, first off, they basically just asked who I was, and I told them that I was Jesus. And after that, a very long, well, relatively long conversation began about whether or not I should take it off and whether or not Jesus was fictional, stuff like that.
Well, and didn't, it was a Dr. Farmer, your principal, said that he was sorry that was your response. He was hoping you were Zeus?
Yeah, he did. He said that he was hoping I would be Zeus or somebody else so he wouldn't have to address the issue. And that's one of the things I pointed out, how he said that basically that it would be okay for me to make fun of one deity and not another. And there was a long conversation about that we had about whether or not Jesus is fictional and whether or not I was being a hypocrite or coming to school as Jesus.
But it's definitely not Zeus. I can see from the picture that that's a Roman outfit that you're wearing. So your principal's not very educated.
it doesn't really matter, I think. And a lot of people didn't even immediately recognize it as Jesus. So I think it was kind of like a common confusion. That's probably why he asked, because a lot of people didn't get it at first.
Now, you, I know that this conversation involved a prior conversation where you've had some state church problems in your school, just like Crystal Myers. You know, we have had two student activist awardees this spring, and both of you
from Tennessee
are from Tennessee. And she had also written about a lot of state church violations in her school, written about being an atheist, and they censored her article. And in your case, you had had some run-ins already. What were some of those problems you've been seeing?
Well, the one that came up in the conversation was concerning how earlier in the year, a few weeks prior to when I went to school as Jesus, I had a conversation with my principal after my science teacher was teaching creationism in the class. And so after that happened, I went to Dr. Farmer about it and told him what happened and asked, like, you know, what's going to be done about it.
Oh, so they already kind of pegged you as a, what, a troublemaker or something, as a non-believing troublemaker?
Well, I don't know if they thought I was a troublemaker, but they definitely knew that I was an atheist at that point.
Well, troublemaker is a compliment, by the way. We should cause trouble on these issues, so good for you.
Well, your science...
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Your science teacher, somebody had asked a question about evolution, and what did your science teacher say in class?
Well, after one of my peers asked essentially whether or not evolution was true by asking, is it true that we come from apes? She basically just said that evolution is only a theory and added that it was a theory that she didn't accept, and she decided to say that, rather, we really come from Adam and Eve.
Wow.
I know this upsets you a lot. What happened?
Well, after she said that, I raised my hand and asked her, like, can you really say that as a science teacher? And she basically just said that she thought she couldn't, didn't see a problem with it. So after class ended is when I decided to go talk to my principal about it.
And who I guess, didn't really get it, huh?
Hmm. Well,
it would appear so.
Talk about fictional characters. Adam and Eve were fictional characters, too.
Easily.
And then I know that it struck me that you told your principal something about Pastafarianism. What was that?
Yeah. Well, when we started talking about what my teacher has said, one of the first things that my principal asked me was whether or not he thought that we should teach the controversy, well, whether or not I thought that we should teach the controversy. And I answered that by saying that I didn't think we should teach the controversy for two reasons. One is that creationism, especially biblical creationism, not even just intelligent design, biblical creationism isn't a scientific theory. And I went on to explain that by saying that if in class, after my teacher had said that, if I had asked her, okay, well, now how can you demonstrate that using the scientific method? She wouldn't have been able to. She would have had to default to the Bible. And we had a conversation about that, because I said, not only is she teaching a variant of intelligent design, she's going for specifically young Earth biblical creationism. And the only way to back that up with any form of evidence at all is to cite the Bible. And if she does that, she's not just teaching creationism, she's teaching everything else that the Bible says. So by doing that, by extension, she's also teaching things that are in other parts of the Bible, such as that non-believers, including myself and a few other people I know are non-believers in that classroom, will be going to hell. I pointed that out. And then I also pointed out things like Pastafarianism. I compared creationism to the intelligent falling parody of Pastafarianism.
Oh, you mean gravity, intelligent falling theory of gravity. Huh.
Yeah.
So, well, now we're about ready to take a break, but I don't think we necessarily want to keep everybody waiting to find out what happened to you with your costume. So why don't we quickly summarize what happened the rest of that day?
Well, by the time the conversation ended, I had taken it off because the reason they gave as to why they wanted me to take it off was because they feared that it would become a distraction. So basically they said, even if it hasn't become a distraction yet, if we find out from any teacher that there is any conversation going on concerning your costume within the classroom, then we'll count it as a distraction and you'll be made to take it off. So after that, I took it off because I didn't want to, spend the rest of the day waiting for a teacher to complain and then being forced to take it off.
So Darth Vader walking in the classroom would not be a distraction. There wouldn't be conversations about that, but Jesus Christ would be, huh?
Isn't that the whole point?
I think it was the most ironic, yeah.
Isn't that the whole point of fictional character day? To make people converse about the different characters? And then you did not have a negative response from your fellow students for the most part, did you?
Well, not for the most part. Most people, even my really religious friends, they said, oh, that's funny, because they realized that was a joke. I think maybe like a handful or less of people, even to today, like have come up to me and said, I don't think it was very funny that you came to school as Jesus. And I think one of the most ironic things about it is more conversation, I think, was sparked by the fact that I had to take it off than if I had just, especially now, given that this has all become so big.
Yeah, now we're going to talk about how big it's become right after the break. It's been big news in Nashville. I know that you've taken some heat, had some unpleasant reactions, and you've been very brave there in the South. So I'm Annie Laura Geller.
And I'm Dan Barker, and we're talking with Jeff Schott, who dressed up like Jesus Christ for his high school's fictional character day. Stay tuned for more.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking with Jeff Schott, who is the Paul J. Gaylor Memorial Student Activist Award Premier recipient there in Tennessee, taking a lot of heat for dressing up like Jesus Christ on Fictional Character Day at his school in at Summit High School in Spring Hill, Tennessee, kind of close to Nashville. So, Jeff, there's been quite a bit of publicity, kind of unexpected because we didn't put out a press release, but it got into the news anyway. And why don't you tell us what's happened and how that's been treating you?
Well, at first, the media coverage started just from blogs. And I found out that the Friendly Atheist made a post about it and stuff like that. And at first, it was really nice because as the media coverage first started, it was all very close and like accurate to the real story, especially because most of the first posts and blogs linked directly to my article so that people could actually read what I had to say. And after that, I found out that people had been writing about it in like major media, such as the Tennessean, the newspaper for Tennessee, and then like USA Today, and then the Channel 5 news near me asked to do an interview with me and stuff like that. And what I learned from it was, as news gets bigger, it definitely gets a lot more shady and the details get blurred.
A lot more fictional, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Like, things were added in that, like, just like small things, but things that weren't true at all. Like, I didn't take, nails. Like, I never took any nails. I just drew them onto my hand. Or, like you said, you asked if I had carried a cross around, which I didn't. So a lot of people were adding things, kind of. And then, of course, the more people that cover it, the more different opinions get thrown in. So it was on, like, major YouTube channels, like SourceFed and stuff like that.
You know, that's kind of what happened with the original Jesus story. There might have been a simple story, but as the years passed and the Gospels were written, it became
embroidered.
Embroidered, exaggerated, elaborated, and unbelievable.
So how did that go down in your school and your private life?
Well, people would just come up to me and be like, oh, I saw you on the news today. And then it would just hit me pretty, like, not hard, but, like, fast, because I wasn't contacted by the news or anything. So I didn't know that was going to be in the news. And at first I was just, it was kind of overwhelming because all these people were covering me and I had no idea because they didn't contact me first. And I also didn't know what they were saying. So, but it ended up not being really that bad, except for, like, as I was going through on the internet and, like, searching my name and stuff to see who was covering me, a lot of people definitely had some negative opinions about what I did. But overall, I've gotten mostly positive feedback.
Well, that's good.
So you could maybe leverage this story, because you want to be a stand-up comic someday. Maybe you'll be a famous stand-up comedian, and it'll all trace back to this initial publicity you were getting.
You'll tell the story.
Yeah.
Now,
definitely.
Jeff, the other interesting thing that you wrote about for us about this story is that, you know, you're in the Bible Belt and you were part of the Bible Belt until several years ago. You reevaluated your beliefs and faith a great deal. You know, how far have you come?
Well, I was raised very Christian, especially because I wasn't in public school. So basically, the only, like, educational facility I ever went to outside of my home was church, which I went to, you know, 4 days a week sometimes. And even as I entered public school, as I got older, I continued by myself being quite devout. And I read the Bible a lot. I read different books, different Christian apologetics, stuff like that. And it got to the point where I was pretty much a young earth creationist with homophobic tendencies, and, you know, I was lean more toward Calvinism, stuff like that. So I was pretty fundamentalist at that point. And then basically what happened was, the summer before ninth grade, I started asking myself, okay, well, what if my version of Christianity isn't true? And so that's when I started researching all the different denominations, from Catholicism, Eastern Orthodoxy, Lutheranism, etc. And then I asked myself, well, what if Christianity isn't true? And then I started looking into Buddhism, Islam, Hinduism, stuff like that. And so basically it went from maybe my denomination's not right to maybe my God's not right, and then eventually maybe there's no God at all.
Well, but that's just like your migration, Dan.
Well, yeah, it's just like that. Even God is a fictional character.
Yeah, and you can definitely see how the idea of God has evolved over time and has become increasingly fictional.
Yeah.
Now, do you credit some of this? I know that you you sent us a picture of yourself holding up Dawkins' God Delusion. And you, mm-hmm. Did that book play a part in your deconversion, or were you already an atheist?
I was already an atheist when I got that book. Really, I can't credit my atheism to one specific author, because I wasn't really reading atheistic books when I became an atheist. I wasn't studying atheism, per se. What turned me atheist was I was studying religion. I was mainly reading the Bible, the Quran, religious texts, and I was reading things that were supporting of religion, because even while I was questioning Christianity and my specific denomination and such, it never occurred to me that no religion was true. It was always in my mind, well, if not Christianity, then maybe Islam, and if not Islam, then maybe Judaism or Hinduism. It never really crossed my mind.
You know,
there would be no correct religion.
You know, Penn Jillette, the comedian, he was on our radio show, and he said, reading the Bible is the fast track to atheism. So I think he agrees with you.
Well,
I definitely agree with that.
You thought your way out of your religion, and that you deserve a lot of credit. Now, you also said something in your article for us in Free Thought Today, that your brother has also had some problems with religion in the schools, including a student caught him reading your copy of Richard Dawkins' The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. And what happened?
Well, yeah, my brother has come to me about a lot of issues, including one of his teachers who used to every day lead prayer as class started. And then, you know, he came to me like the day before I decided to go to as Jesus, which, and this is also one of the things that really, you know, made me decide, yeah, I should go, because I was debating, is it a good idea? Will it cause more trouble than, you know, laughs? And anyway, he came to me and he was like, Jeff, I'm sorry, but your book is kind of messed up. And I was like, what do you mean? And then he told me that he was in science class, of all places, during a break, reading The Greatest Show on Earth. And that day he had a substitute. And he told me that one of the students saw the book and didn't necessarily recognize Richard Dawkins or The Greatest Show on Earth, but at the bottom, the subtitle is The Evidence for Evolution. So when they saw that, they picked up the book and threw it on the ground, which Wow. started a discussion. And my brother started trying to, you know, defend evolution in the midst of all these creationists in his science class and the substitute teacher, siding with the creationists.
And, then, and you're
he
the,
told me.
You're in the state of Tennessee, home of the Scopes trial. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
so
out.
True and,
we're out of time, but we thank you so much for joining us today and for your speaking up and your sense of humor.
Thank you for having me on.
We've been talking with Jeff Schott, who dressed up like Jesus on his high school's fictional character day. Thank you. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We also want to thank Dave McCann, producer and engineer of the show, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. The show is recorded here in Madison, Wisconsin. To learn more about our show, go to ffrf.org/radio.
You can read Jeff's story in the April Free Thought Today. You can find it online at ffrf.org under Publications Free Thought Today, April. Join us at 1-800-335-4021. Sign up at ffrf.org. Help us broadcast, litigate, educate. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.